J I V as in Victor, A N as in Nancy, J E E. Javante? E E, yeah, too easily.
J as in John.
Just, yeah. Oh, pleasure. It's humming.
Pick it up and see if you
can. Oh, the humming's going to be there until he's got a song playing. So we're going to have a humming on until after he plays the song and we'll shut the speaker.
The song I actually probably play at the end.
Oh,
is that?
Then we're going to shut the speaker.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Cool. How are you guys? Good. Yeah, it's been awesome to be with you all. You know, I really appreciate what John had to say last night. I appreciate I really appreciated the conversation we've had, because I do hear an undercurrent, at least personally, I hear an undercurrent of things that are being shared. So it may just have to do with the fact that I'm thinking about this undercurrent, so I'm going to talk about it today. But I've really enjoyed just being with you guys. This is anytime you can get together with other brothers and sisters that you don't normally see, it's a treat, you know, and it's just a great thing. And you can't underestimate the time that you have here and the conversations you have and the people you meet. Because I was here last year. This is my third year coming here, and I was here last year. I met an individual by the name of Jay Ferris, and yeah. You know, Jay passed away. He's not here with us here right now. But, man, just meeting him and getting a chance to marinate on what he shared and getting to know him over this last year is really hard for me to put into words how different my life is today because of just a brief encounter with somebody. And that happens all the time. You know, and that's happening here right now. Whether you know it or not, it is happening. So don't underestimate that. So really, just it's an honor to be back here. And what I want to talk to you about today is really a lot of the outworking of and meeting this brother last year. I've experienced a lot just because of some of those conversations and just what was imparted to me in that time. So I'm really excited. At the same time, the title of this is Loving Like God. That's a really heavy thing. That's a really serious thing. That's not light, and it's not for everyone. And I say that meaning like this. Yeah, we loving like God and receiving His love is for everyone. But what I'm going to say, like in the context to say it this morning, is really not for everyone right now. And I understand that. Like I might share some things that you just were like, that's just weird. And I don't get it. I don't like it. That's totally okay. Like I'm okay with that. And it may not be for you right now. You may determine that it's not from the Lord. And that's totally okay because you have to discern that. I'm not here to like sell this. I want to share a story with you. Really, it's a story that I've experienced, and it's just really my experience that I want to share with you. And if it resonates, great. If it doesn't, that's great. But I would like to ask you a favor as I share. I just would like to have some ability to, what John talked about, like the FOC should be a safe place. It should be a safe place. And I have my experience the last couple of years in body life with an organic group of believers in Nashville has been that it's been really redeeming because I've been a part of a lot of things and none of them are safe because they were created by man. They were created by, everybody had agendas and we still have agendas. I'm not saying we don't, but it's different when you're learning to live by a shared life with a group of folks, and they're seeing you through the Spirit, through the lens of the Spirit, and they're assuming something. So when you look at, like 2 Corinthians 5 says, we no longer view one another according to the flesh, but all those who are Christ are new creations, the old has passed away. So when that's a really important thing. Like when you view somebody from a different lens, not according to the flesh, that means they're a new creation, you assume something. And what you're assuming is, this is Christ. This is the expression of Christ. And you are, everything else is filtered out. So you assume purity. You know, Paul, there's a scripture, he's talking to Timothy, he's saying, so pure, all things are pure.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what you assume. So I would just like to ask, I'm assuming that you're assuming that about me. That you're assuming that I'm pure. Because if you don't assume that, what you'll probably hear is something different.
Yeah.
You know? So just I'd like to ask you to assume that about me. Okay, because I'm assuming that about me, and I'm assuming that about you. So that doesn't mean there's not, you know, things that need to get fleshed out in real conversations, but that's just the overall theme here. Also would like to ask you not to, like, put, I doubt this is going to be broadcast, but I just don't want this to be out there, because I just want to have a conversation with you here, because I want to share a story with you that involves people, and I just would hate for that to get back to those people, but not a bad story, but it's just a very intimate story, and I don't want it to get out there, so I would just, yeah, just respect that, you know, so not that you would, just wanted to clarify that. But I want to talk about something that John talked about last night. He talked about that Christ, like, we don't, when we think of Pentecost, we don't normally think of, we think of, oh, the Spirit came, something happened, it was awesome, whatever. But we don't think about that as the coming of Jesus. Like, but that is a legit reality. Like, yeah. He came again at Pentecost, and he is here. And a lot of times, the misconception with Christianity, I don't even like the word, to be completely honest with you, because the word Christianity was applied, it was given to believers from people who didn't get it. These were people looking on the outside of Antioch. They were looking at a church group in Antioch. They were going, oh, those are those Christian, these imitators of Jesus. And that's what it looked like to them. These are people who are trying to imitate the life of this person. The Christian life is not an imitative life at all. And I know Paul says imitate means imitate. And that's totally twisted to completely misunderstand what the heart of the New Testament is about. We're not imitating him like that. So it is the same life. Yep. You know what I mean? It's the life of Christ. He is the vine, we're branches. The branches, he didn't say, you know, you're going to be a vine. You're going to imitate the vine. There's only one person who's always trying to do that. That's Satan. You go back to the beginning. He wanted to be like the Most High. And the mankind has kind of adopted that. And it's like, we're going to be like the Most High. We're going to imitate. And it's the whole religious system trying to accomplish and do and, you know, trying to follow Jesus' moral standards and trying to live this great life. That's never been the heart of the Lord. The heart of the Lord is that we take his life and express his life. It's his life. It's not imitated in that sense. It looks like imitation. So yeah, it's imitation. But it's him. It's his life living being lived out for us. I mean, that's really sick. No longer we who live, it's Christ who lives in us, you know, we die or whatnot. So I know that you know that. I just want to repeat that, like, yeah. We're not imitating. It's not Simon Says, you know? Like, it's him through us. So, loving like him. So Jesus came and he gave us a new commandment. John's talked about this. I think he might have talked about this last year or year before. I can't remember, but in several different places. But John has talked about a lot of the new commandment is very radical. It's completely new. Meaning that it's not like the old. Meaning that the old is like you. It is like imitation. Here's the set of standards. We're going to try to live up to that. Mm-hmm. But the new commandment is different because here you have Jesus, who is the new Adam, comes on the earth. And this new Adam is—he is living the way mankind was created to live by another life. So here comes Jesus. He's living not by his own life, and he said that. I don't. The Son can do nothing of his own. Only that the Father does. That's what the Son does. What the Father says, the Son says that. So he is living out the life of his Father. He's living the life. He's living by divine life, and he loves that life. So he loves people with another life. Not even his own human. Yeah, he was sinless. So he had no sin in his flesh. But he's still not loving from his flesh. Mm-hmm. He didn't live by his flesh. He laid that down continually. And he's living by another life. And the love that he loved people with was off the charts. Mm-hmm. It blew people away. People couldn't get enough of it. It would take all the walls down. You know? And then, that's amazing. So we can read about that. We open the scriptures. We read about the life of Jesus Christ. And we go, oh man, that's incredible. That's how we love people. That's Jesus, you know? But then he gives us the new commandment. He says, oh, I got a new commandment for you. That you're going to love one another. You're not going to try to imitate me. Watch how I do it. Listen to stories about how there's going to become a book someday. The book's not here, but someday there's going to be a book. You're going to study it, parse every word. Figure out how I did it intellectually and try to imitate it. Well, that's what Christianity has done. But that's not his heart. He didn't say that. He said, actually, in the same way that I have loved you, mm-hmm. you are now going to love one another.
ridiculous. That is absolutely stunning. And that is the day we're living in right now. We have the ability to not love like him, but love in the exact same way he loved, with the exact same substance, the exact same life essence, which is his life, which we are now living by. So when he gave that command, that's cool. So we hear that and we go, man, that's awesome, that's amazing. I'm telling you right now, if you begin to like loving like God, which is the title of this whole session here, it is really dangerous. Like, it's not for the light-hearted. It's not, you don't take it lightly. It will get you killed.
Yes.
100% of the time. And it will mess you up. It'll mess your family up. It'll mess all your relationships up. It breaks down every wall that's ever been put up, and there's a lot of walls. And I'm just saying that if you want to love like God, count the cost. Like, you do count the cost. Jesus talked about that. You know, there is a kind of cost. There is a cost with this. It's great. Love is, who doesn't want to love? Like, I've never met somebody who was born that were like, yeah, love's not for me. I'm not about love. Everybody wants love. Everyone wants to experience love at the deepest way that you can experience love. Nobody wants second
best. You want to get it, not give it.
Right?
You want to get it, not give it.
And you know, that's exactly right. We want to get it. And you know, we can only give what we get. But we're all created for love.
Yeah.
So, but it's significant. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to love like God, and that's what this journey is. Organic church, life in Christ, whatever. It's really, that's what we're saying. We want to love one another, like him. Okay. So, I have a story that I just want to communicate to you. And I've realized that I used to read the scriptures and I would read the stories of Jesus and I would try to get insights out of that because it was cool what happened 2,000 years ago. It was awesome. But I'm realizing, and this again goes with what John said last night, these stories in the scriptures are not simply historical accounts of what happened. Even though they are. They are descriptions of the reality of our own lives. Mm-hmm. Like, that's still happening. Everything you read about in Scripture is still happening. It's not over. It's like, we're living it out. And I recently read a story. I mean, there's a story I've known, but I've recently lived this story. I experienced the story. And so I want to talk about the woman, and the Samaritan woman. But I also want to weave into that my story, because I met a Samaritan woman. I had the same encounter with this Samaritan woman. And the same results happened. And it's stunning, because I was like, wait a minute, I've read this in the scriptures. Like, I was living it out, I didn't know what was happening. So I was like, wait, this is the whole story. I've read about in John 4. Like, this, I've lived it. It's really significant. So that's what I'd like to do, is kind of read these two stories in with you.
So, you know the story. I'm just assuming we know. We're not going to read it. I'm not going to read it to you, because you've read it. You know the story. Or I'm assuming that you do. But there are, when I was thinking about the story of the Samaritan woman and Jesus' interaction with her, and then my story of the Samaritan woman I met, I realized, thinking about this talk, that there's like these, I call them realities, I don't, there's probably a better word for it, but there are realities of loving like God. Like, if you want to love like God, or as we love like God, there are realities to that. Okay, that I've become aware of, that are, some of them are problematic, some of them are great, whatever, but they're just, they are what they are. So, the realities just are. So, when I read this story, you know, you have John 4, Jesus, he's traveling. It's really interesting that the crowds are starting to get big at that point. Crowds are getting big. His disciples are baptizing more than John's disciples. The Pharisees got wind, they're like angry now. Like, oh, we gotta watch this guy, he's on the map. So he goes off somewhere. Jesus like disappears. And he goes to somewhere that no one else is going, which is Samaria. Like, Jesus didn't go there. No man's going to a bad place. Yeah. So he goes up there and he's tired. He's in traveling. He's trying to get away from the hoopla or the system or the you know, he's trying to avoid all that. So he goes to this he's walking through this area he shouldn't be in this area. And he's a Jewish person. So he goes to this town. He's tired. So he sits down by this well. You know? And as he's sitting there, and I'm just speculating here, but he's thirsty, okay? He's thirsty, wants a drink. But he recognizes that. And so I think, and he's, remember, he's looking. There's a reason he's here. He's not just
killing time, or, you know, there is, it's very purposeful here, but he's beginning to look for something. There's like a hunger and acknowledging something. So I thought the first reality that I would want to say is that when you if you're going to love like God, you have to acknowledge thirst in yourself. Because love is about, love is a share. We're not just talking about love is, you give what you receive, but you don't receive until you're thirsty or hungry. You're not going to eat unless you're hungry or thirsty. But then if you when you receive, then you have something to give. So it starts with acknowledging that you have a need, that you're thirsty, acknowledging thirst, okay? So let me just tell you how that story began with me. I'm just using one example, okay? Shared life, community, organic church, whatever. It's just, this is the story of that. I'm not going to share all that story. This is one story. So I had an opportunity recently to go overseas. So I went to, about 9 months ago, okay, I'll give you the backstory. 9 months ago, I went to Switzerland and France, spent about 2 weeks there. Some of the folks in the church body that I'm a part of in Nashville, we just had some connections there, and there was a group that has left the institution that are trying to meet together around Christ's life in Switzerland. And they've been doing this for the last couple of years, trying to meet together. But we had a connection with them. We went over 9 months ago just to kind of scope it out, see what this is like, see if we could encourage them or be in any kind of service to them. So we went there, loved it. Loved what we saw, loved the saints there, really fell in love with what was going on there. So, and I've studied French most of, since high school, and then since then, I've really stayed up with it and really wanted to be, I want to master the language I'm not fluent. But this was like, for me, a dream come true to go to a French speaking part of the world and engage with folks and encourage brothers and sisters. So, after that trip, that 2 week trip 9 months ago, I was like, man, I gotta go back. I have to go back. There's something here. And the doors opened up for me to go back in May of this year. And I went back for 2 months. And I stayed there with this church body. Just to encourage them, really know them, informal, just to be encouragement, just to share life. And for me personally, just to learn the language, to be immersed in the culture. So it's, I would go there in May, I stayed until almost July. And when I was there, I noticed something start happening to me. As soon as the plane landed in Switzerland, I started to notice something begin to awaken within me. And to go 9 months earlier, previous to that, we had spent time with some brothers and sisters, and there was this particular sister in the church body who had invited us to her home for a meal, you know. And I thought she was a part of the church body 9 months ago. Comes to find out, she wasn't really a part of the body. She had just been invited by another brother in the church body. By the way, I use brother and sister to refer to saints, you know. I know that you know that, but that's how. Just, I'm not talking about nuns or anything. So female person in Christ. Always, okay. So you got it. But so I go to the sister's house 9 months ago. We're having dinner with her, and I'm assuming she's a part of the church. You know, built together as a church family. She's not. She has been invited. And this was like, she'd only been once or twice to meet with the group. She had no real understanding or revelation of this. She was very much a part of the traditional church setting, you know, and all that kind of thing. I didn't know that 9 months ago. So anyway, we're just enjoying time at her house, and we're like talking. Of course, she's like looking at all these other folks from the body, they're trying to figure them out. We're in her home, we're eating dinner, she's trying to figure us out. Like, why are y'all here from America, and what are you doing, and all this kind of thing. So, no big deal. It was a great time. I leave. We're only there for a quick trip, you know, and then when I go back to the States, I don't think about her. I didn't really think much about that. The church body still kept meeting, but then they had a fallout. She started coming after we left, but she didn't understand. So she's just like, boy, you know, it's weird. Like, where is your pastor? Where is your worship leader? And what do you guys do? You just hang out? Like, who's teaching? How are you getting... She's part of the system, you know, she's an understanding. So there was a big blow up in the church body, and she like never comes back. She's like, you guys are weird, I'm out. So she didn't come back. And I heard about that when I was here in the States. And you know, I was like, oh, see that. Really much up. So I go back this time in May, this past year, and as soon as the plane lands, something starts happening inside of me. I'm starting to feel something. And instantly she comes to mind. Her name's Rochelle. So Rochelle comes to mind. How she's doing. And I kind of remember this whole thing that happened. And I'm like, wow, she's not. I don't think she's a part of the body. So I wonder how she's doing. No big deal. So I, as soon as this brother in the body comes to pick me up from the airport, I get in the car with him, you know, and I'm a little overwhelmed, different, you know, it's a different language, everything, so I'm trying to communicate and think and But the only thing I could, one of the first things I said to him was like, "Oh, Rochelle doing?" He's like, "Who?" Like, you know, and he said, "Oh, yeah, Rochelle, I don't know." He's like, "I have no idea, I haven't seen her. 9 months, like, we've just been a long time. She's gone, you know?" Like, and he kind of told me the story that I already knew. He recounted to me what happened. I said, "Oh, okay. Nope, nothing, no big deal." And literally, he closes his mouth, and his phone rings. And it's her. He's like, "What? Where's my phone?" So he answers the phone, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And it's all in French, so I'm not catching everything. I'm catching most of it. He's like, "What are you doing? How can you call me? Like, we haven't talked in all these months." And, you know, and like, and you'll never believe who we wanted to call. "What are you doing here?" And blah, blah, blah. So he's like, "Why are you calling me?" She's like, "I don't know. You came to mind that I want to call you." So he hung up the phone. I said, "That's the Lord." He's like, "This is the weirdest thing." So he's blown away. I'm blown away. I'm like, "That's the Lord. I don't know why. I don't know what.
But the Lord is doing something." And I began to sense something within me increase. It was kind of a thirst. I got to find out what's going on with her. That's all it was. Just that. So, second reality. That was the first reality. Acknowledging thirst. Second reality that I like to talk about is when you're going to love like God, you have to abstain from evil. Or from the appearance of evil. How's that?
From the appearance of evil. Now let me explain that. Abstain from the appearance of evil. So here's Jesus. Comes to a well. Sits down. Here's this woman. She's a woman. And I hate to say it, but in most of the world, women are a sign of evil. It's really sad. It's the opposite. It's not true. But that's what it's the way it is. So she not only she's a woman, she is a Samaritan woman, which is really bad. So people who compromised in history, you know, intermingled Jews with non-Jews, and so they're really looked down on. Then you have not just a Samaritan, not just a woman, not just a Samaritan, but one who's a really bad reputation. And she's known. So here's Jesus, you know, and there's people around. And his disciples and all that. So if he was an evangelical, that's not what Jesus would do right now. He said, "We all talk to women. Not that it's bad, but we have a witness. We have a witness before here. And people are watching me." And I mean, this is the whole thing. You know how it works. We can't live this. We can't do this. Okay. But he was a man who wanted to abstain from evil, so he did talk to her. So what is evil? I'll tell you what evil is. Okay. Evil is what happened. Evil is when mankind fell into sin, there was a lot of walls that came up. And really, every wall that Jesus takes down is taken down for a reason. There are walls that were put up. First wall between male and female is bam, right there. Male and female, totally separate. Mankind is male and female. You can't think of mankind with one sex or the other. They're both. But there was a wall put up. Races. Walls go up between the races. You know, Jew, Gentile. Economic walls go up. Slave, free. All these walls go up. So when Jesus, the reality of Jesus, he's going to break all those walls. He's not like the reality of his life is going to break this wall down, but it's actually going to be rough. So, like, it is evil. The walls are evil. He has no intention of safeguarding the walls. Religion has emphasized the walls. Religion has immoralized the walls, and it's evil. And he has no intention of playing the game. He will not, "Hey, I'm respecting their culture." No. Some parts of the culture are evil, and that's one of them. And he's like, "I don't intend to even play with this. I'm not trying to reach these people, or I'm going to respect that part of the culture." You know? You go to a Muslim world, men don't talk to women. He's not going to respect that. And it's going to cause a lot of problems. And it did for him. So here he is. He wanted to abstain from evil. So we have to get a new definition of what evil is. Mm-hmm. The religious system does not get to define what evil is.
No. Amen.
His life defines what evil is. They will call it evil. They'll say he is a man of loose morals and look what he's doing. And he doesn't care. So he made a choice to abstain from evil by talking to her. Because that wall is evil.
So he goes up and he talks to her. And And you can just, I'm speculating, but you can hear the talk. Can you imagine what the disciples are thinking?
They're like, this guy, I know, we know Jesus. He means well. He's all naive here. He doesn't understand. He don't do this kind of thing. There are problems here. There are issues that come up. So you can hear the talk. You know? This is just one example. There's many other examples for this. So abstaining from evil is huge. So there was tension, I'm sure, as a human being. And he lived in the flesh, even though it wasn't simple, as human. I'm sure he felt that. Like, man, this is not easy. So you have to take a step. Like, when you're going to cross a barrier, imagine interracial, like 50, 60 years ago in this country, especially in the South. You have to sit in a place that's designated for black people. If you're white, the first step you make is you got tension. And people looking at you. You got problems. You know, whatever. So, like, you do that, there's tension. So I am sure that he felt that tension. And, but he decided that he was going to go with love. What does love dictate in this moment? Love in him. Because he followed that. So, my experience with that is the same. So, let me explain. So, the phone call, we're in Switzerland, the phone call, I acknowledge, oh, the Lord's doing something. Didn't think much of it after that. Like, okay, we'll just see what the Lord's doing. So, my friend that I was with, he sells sausages. He's a sausage salesman. So he goes from village to village, and it's really a great way. He's got such a great, he loves people, he meets all kinds of people. He's one of the brothers in the church body there, and he has met so many people and like brought a lot of the group into this sausage sales. So I would just go with him, and he's selling sausages to these little villages, you know. And we were in this one little town, and he had like a route, it was like this little beach road. It's really kind of a place where he normally goes. So I was following him, we walked in this beach road. It was really kind of a nice little place, right? You know, it's a little picturesque, whatever. I walked in this place, I'm telling you, the atmosphere changed. As soon as we walked in, I felt something happen. And I look up, and there's Rochelle. Right there in the place, sitting with this guy who is like a really bad guy. Like I'm saying, he's like, he's like really, she's in not a good situation with this relationship. It's a very bad relationship. I can think about that. So, here she is sitting with us. I'm down. How are we at odds? He's staring at all this time. We have to be like, I could just go off the plane. You know, I'm just hanging out with her for the day. And here she is. So now, like, it's in, like, so she's like, what are you all doing here? The atmosphere changed. And all of a sudden, so we greet, you know, I greet her. Hey, how are you? I can't believe, like, what are you? And so all this, you know, she doesn't speak any English. So it's all awkward. We're trying to do this through broken French, my broken French, you know. And all of a sudden, this guy who's with her gets irate. And, he blows up in French. You know, he's like yelling and he's just irate. He doesn't understand, not a believer, that kind of thing. So he just storms out of the bistro, leaves before his food comes. So angry. No reaction. And she's like, I can't believe this is what happened. But love causes a reaction. Mm-hmm. I don't think he even understood what was happening. He just knew there's something happening. He wanted to control her as soon as he walked in. She just kind of like beamed because she recognized, oh, love walked in the door.
Yes.
Christ in me walks in the door. And I'm telling you, and my brother too, they're on the song with me. Like, we walk in, like, so he storms out, jealous, rage, angry. She's like, I'm sorry, I don't know what happened. Please excuse me. I'm like, don't worry about it. It's all right. It's no thing, you know? And I'm just aware that something's happening here. And she's like, please, you know. And I didn't have a lot of money at the time with me, you know, because, you know, the way my trip worked, it was just kind of a week at a time. And so I honestly had to really depend on the saints to eat when I was there. So here we walk into this bistro, and she's like, please, he bought dinner for us, and he left. I'm not going to stop. Sit down, like, enjoy this meal. Tell me to go stand there, please. My apology, please enjoy. I know the Lord always, there's no detail, that's just the detail.
Right.
It's always a sign of a greater reality that's happening. I'm getting it. So I'm like, okay, Lord, what are you saying? Showing me. Okay. There it is. I'm taking from your enemies, I'm giving to you, but I'm taking from what the enemy has stolen. I'm giving you rest. So we ate this exquisite meal, and she leaves, and I walk on, I'm asking the Lord, what does this mean? And I just tell you, like, in my spirit, I heard him speak to me. Like, I just sensed him saying, don't underestimate this sister named Rochelle. Don't underestimate what you're seeing here. She's not a part of the body. I'm not telling people, like, she's not, I'm here for the body. I'm here. I'm really here to encourage the saints here. I'm not here for, she's on the sidelines. She's not even a part of it. She doesn't even get it. Lord was like, well, listen to you. Listen to the love in you. Listen to the life in you. She's very significant. And don't ignore this. She is a picture of my bride in this area. And what happens to her is what is going to happen to the church in this area. So just be aware of this and don't worry about anything else. And I felt that tension. I'm like, this is really. And she had a bad reputation. Just to let you know. She had a good reputation. So I'm like, wow, I thought, like, what are the saints here going to think? You know, if I agree. And so I was like, you know, looking back on it, like, I have to abstain from evil. And that means I have to do what the Lord's doing. I have to engage this, whatever that means. And I knew at that point, and what I also sensed from the Lord in that moment was, love will win this battle. And if you wait, if you like just believe me, what's dead will be brought back to life. I will resurrect the dead. Resurrection is reality. She will not stay dead. She will be resurrected. You're going to see a resurrection in front of your eyes before you leave. And as far away as this sister was, like, I'm like, this is going to have to be you to do. Mm-hmm. And I knew it at that point. I knew it. So it put something to rest. It's like, okay, I'm really confident at this point. I don't know how or what, but that was the beginning.
So abstaining from evil. I had to make a choice to abstain from evil. And I did that by committing to not ignore her. Third reality of loving like God is to avoid the knowledge tree. To avoid the knowledge tree. Okay. So, going back to Jesus' interaction with the Samaritan woman,
you know the story, but shortly into the conversation, she wants to debate with him about a theological matter. Right? She wants to talk about worship. I don't know. People, there's a lot of speculation why she did that. It doesn't matter. She wanted to get into this. What is worship? We're, you know, hey, we Samaritans, we have this system up here. We do it like this. Y'all Jews, you do it like that. I'm there. Who's right? He wants to talk about the meal. Who's what? Blah, 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 blah. You know? So Jesus, he kind of dabbles in it. He doesn't really go there. He's like, you know, speaking of worship, the Father is looking for worshipers. Who will worship in the Spirit and truth. We're not going to go to this place or that place. But it's going to become a reality. She doesn't really understand anything about it. He's just like saying, like, this is. But he had to make a choice. Like, he could have gotten to this one lengthy. We and you.
Yeah.
We are this, y'all are this. Samaritans are this, we Jews are this. This is what we do, this is why we're here, blah, blah. He could have really unpacked that and blew her out of the water theologically about why the system of worship for Jews was biblical or superior according to the law. And he'd be right. And he didn't even have said that. He's like, well, it is like the salvation is from the Jews. He's not discounting it. But he didn't go there. He quickly changed, you know. And my interaction with Rochelle was very similar to that. Okay, so after that beast grove incident, I get confident. Like, we start having, and there's no, like, I could be here all day telling you how the Lord opened up these details. But she started coming to the meetings with the church. And it was a disaster. Every time she'd come to these meetings, when the church would be together, she would blow it up. There'd be an argument. She'd want to, and then when she would meet with me, there was a few times that we would get together with her outside of that, and she was so angry. And she would write, and she wanted to debate. And she would want to talk about worship. She's a musician. So worship was a big deal for her. And she wanted to talk about, you don't understand, and this is how we should worship, and blah, blah, blah. And she would go there, and then she would pester me with questions. What do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And what do you think about this? And why do you do it like that? And blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and why don't you guys have this? We have this. This is important. This is why. There's all these statements. She's sharing her heart. She's very angry and frustrated. And didn't believe like this. So I didn't believe like this. I'm just thinking, that's kind of odd that you want to convince me. I'm coming back from America. Really, no, you don't. Oh, why do you care what I think? And I didn't really speak your language. So, so we're like, she really was intent on being able to love the Lord. Share it. Communicating with me is don't answer her questions. Don't debate with her. Let her speak her peace. Just listen to her. And don't even worry about the conversation. they're talking about that. Mm-hmm. And what I became aware of was that this is about love. Mm-hmm. This is about somebody's absence of love, and they're really angry, and you're never going to answer their questions because the root of it has nothing to do. The root of it is love.
Yeah.
It is not a theological problem. And if you look at the Samaritan woman, it was the same problem, it was the same issue with her. Now think about it. Like, here's a woman who, she had 5 husbands. She was living with a man at the time. There's a reason for that. You don't have 5 husbands and then live with a guy if you're not lovesick in some way, shape, or form. She was hungry. So Jesus is not going to stay on this worship thing, this theological debate. He's going to get to the root of the matter. He was already getting to the root of the matter. So as I'm meeting with Rochelle, I'm determined. I will stay away from the knowledge tree with you. I will not engage you in this banter about theology because it's pointless, because it's never going to answer your question, because the root of it is not that. So if you're going to love like God, third reality of that is you got to avoid the knowledge tree. It's interesting that, just talking about worship, the Greek word for worship, I won't get into all of it, but really the essence of that, you know, a part of it, is it communicates like leaning in for a kiss. That's what it means. The root of the word is to lean in to receive a kiss. To give a kiss. You know, that's a beautiful picture of worship. We can debate the mechanics of it, which is what the Samaritan woman was doing. And what Rochelle was trying to do, this is the reality, is like, hey, this is about love. This isn't about the mechanics of it. And we can get into the mechanics of it later. But this is the heart of it. So I remember one time that I was with my this other brother, and she actually called and was like, hey, I want to meet with you guys, which is so odd. She kept wanting to meet. And every time we meet, she was so angry. But she wanted to meet, she kept initiating. She's like, we're going to meet in France and Switzerland. It's natural during the afternoons. People take an hour or 2 out of the schedule to have wine or have coffee together. And so she's like, let's have a glass, is what they would say. We want to have a glass. So she's like, called and was like, I want to meet with you. And so we met her, and she was late. And so I ordered a glass of wine that's sitting there, and I was like thirsty. I wanted to drink it. And I just sensed the Lord saying, just wait, share it with her when she gets here. So she gets there and she wanted to talk about worship. And why her form of worship is better, all this stuff. And I'm just like listening to her and smiling. And she's wondering why I'm not arguing with her. Because I really argued with her. That's kind of crazy, you know? And after she was done just unloading on me, I just took a drink of wine. And with her. And that's worship. Like sharing. You know, Jesus was thirsty. He wanted a drink. It was legit. So he talks to the. He says, "Hey, can I have a drink?" Because he wanted a drink. He's not playing. He's really serious. I want a drink. She didn't have anything to give her. So he's like, "Well, if you knew who I was, I would give you a drink. If you asked me, I'd give you a drink." But he would not give her the drink simply for her only, even though it was for her. It was to quench her thirst. But then it's like, "But can I have what I just gave you? Can you give it back to me? Can we share?" That's what love is an exchange. It's a giving and receiving. He wants that with us. You know? That's the heart of it. So once you have a substance of life, then love, codependent relationships are very different. Codependent relationships are, I will take from you. It's a taker. I'll just take from you. I need something, give me what you got. But love is not codependent. Love, you have substance to give, but it's also, so he's not just unloading on this lady, like, I'm thirsty and you will give me something to drink. He's not just doing that. He's saying, okay, I'm thirsty, yes. And you don't have any water to give to me. So I'll give you the water. Don't you worry about it. But I don't just, I can eat with the water itself. You know, he could like, he's not living water. He could have went out the well. It's not about that. He wants to share the water. This is exchange. This is heart. So it's to, you don't kiss yourself. How can you kiss yourself? But you do kiss another. You lean in, you receive, you give and you receive. And so that really is the heart of it. And so that's what he wanted with the Samaritan woman. He wanted to share. I got water for you, but I want to share it. So it's worship. It's really the heart. It's not an accident that they get in this debate about worship. So she wants to talk about the mechanics. He's
There's a minute left.
Yeah, cool. The fourth reality of loving like God is having confidence in indwelling love. It's really important. So if you're going to love like God, you have to have confidence in the life in you. You can't second guess this. You can't violate your confidence. You got to know where it's coming from. So scenario: Jesus at the well with a woman. Speculation here, okay? She's a woman with a bad reputation. He's talking to her, sending signals. In the world eyes, that is sending signals. It's really not good. So he's sending signals. And she probably doesn't know what's going on. Just put yourself in her shoes. Let's say you had a bad reputation. You used to pick up guys. This guy's talking to you. What does he want? You don't know, but you can assume what it means. So, my suspicion is that she was actually interested in him. She was interested in Jesus. She had some. So he's like, "Hey, are you single?" Basically, is what he asked. "Hey, where's your husband?" "Oh, I'm my husband." She left that afternoon. Why do you think she said that? So an evangelical man would say, "I am out of this situation. This is bad. This could go really bad for me. I'm out of here. Like, I don't trust myself, or I don't trust her, or whatever." Wrong. He doesn't care. I'm telling you, he does not care. He is so confident in the love that's inside of him. He's like, "This love that's in me, I know the love in me. I'm not separate. I don't know about you, but I know about me. I know the love in me. And it's going to overcome whatever you're doing right now." And it's a real thing. We're going to go into what this is really about. And we're going to talk about that. So then, of course, he shares. He has insight of life. Obviously, you have five husbands. The one you're with is a sixth man. And he is, not your husband, your living, whatever. So, it's interesting that, I think it's really interesting that if he didn't have confidence in the love in him, he would have bolded. And I sense the same thing, because when I would sit with Rochelle, I'm just using her as an example, when I would sit with her and we'd have these conversations, the Lord would mean so much for her. I would have words for her, questions to ask her, all kind of things I want to give her, and she was getting really unnerved by that. And she would look at me in the face with such utter light. "You creep." She had, what had happened, what I had sensed from her was, her dad, she never knew her dad, never knew love from her dad, and as a result, she went looking for love, and she had this history of men, all bad relationships. Every man she had ever known was, there were strings attached. And so she was convinced, she had never, the Lord was really communicating to me, she has never seen love, ever. Pure, divine love that has no strings attached, that is pure, that is not of the flesh, that doesn't want anything. She's never seen it, she doesn't even know it's possible, and therefore was hopeless in life. So she was looking for that. So with this whole situation, she had
Rochelle
had this suspicion. So when she looked at me, she would look me in the face and she would ask me, "How's your wife? Where is your, like basically she's saying, "Where is your wife? How is your wife?" And she would look at me sneer on her face, like, "You creep, you come here in the name of the Lord to minister with this church, and like you're meeting with me, and I know what you want. Like, you want something." And I just would love, I would like look at her. My wife wasn't looking at the church. She was there for 2 months and she was back. And she's like, "Who does that? That's weird." And you obviously have bad intentions. And I could see in her eyes. I would just smile at her and say, "Don't you want this way?" Like, I said, "She's great. Awesome." She says hello. She never mind me further. Figure this out. But I was like, "I am so confident in the love in me, I don't doubt this. Just you wait. Like, you're going to get a picture of this." Yeah. So confidence in indwelling love. Don't doubt it. If you don't have confidence in it, don't do it. Don't go with it. Don't violate your conscience. Number five, last one. Okay. I just want to say this. True love is unoffendable. If it's Christ's love, it can't be offended. Because she would offend me.
Because she, questioning me and the way she treated me was like dirt. And she would assume the worst in me because she was angry.
Yeah.
She was angry at all men. And so I was not offended by that because the only reason I was even engaged in it was because there was a life in me that was so intense that I thought I was going to die. I could not stop praying for her. I would stay up at night thinking about what the Lord wanted with this sister, and I would pray for her. It was so intense. And so I would be filled with so many things to get her away from me. And she would just spit in my face every time for 2 months almost. Again, this is happening in conjunction with the rest of the church body. And they're like, leave her alone. She doesn't. So true love is unoffendable. And the reality of it is that you have to have confidence in that, or else you're just going to be done with it. So the last thing is that I want to say this. If you're going to love like God, if you're truly going to love like God, you have to be willing to embrace what I would call hopeful despair. Hopeful despair. Like, there's a despair in it. The only way I know how to put it is, you know, there's an idea out there that in Christ, living by Christ's life is all bubbles. You know, like it's all fun and games. It's great and light. He did say that. He did say, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now that means something, yes. But he's the man of sorrows.
Man of
grief. He carried grief. And I get it. I understand there was substitutionary work he was doing on the cross, all that. But there's more to that. When you all know what this means. You already know what this means because you know how to love, because you love what is in you, and because you've loved somebody. And if you've ever loved somebody, you have carried love, sorrow that comes with love. You know what that's about.
Yes.
And if love cannot control another, it cannot demand on another, but it is real, and when you have it, it weighs on you like a... It's like, what are you going to do? Nothing. There's nothing you can do about it. But you feel this at the deepest part of you. And Jesus had that. Like, he loved that Samaritan woman. No doubt about it. He loved people. He carried the Lord's heart for people, and it broke his heart. And so many times he would want to give to them. I have so much I want to give to you. So much life I want to give you. But you would not have it. You would not want it. And so it's just this despair. But he knew. Okay, it's not over. It's not hopeless. It's not like, he knew, I know in the end it's going to work out. I know that. For the joy set before him, he endured the thorn of the cross. He's got that. But it doesn't mean in the moment, because we live in time. We still live in time. And the time is created for a reason. It's not to be thrown out. We live in time to experience longing and frustration. Frustration is a gift from the Lord. And it's good. And you have to embrace it because it's where love is expressed. It's in the longing. And you have, it's like, hopeful, I would say hopeful despair. There is no one that can satisfy the heart of Jesus other than his bride. He's in love. Okay? He is totally in love. And when you're in love with somebody, nobody else can satisfy you. Nobody else. And until they do, you're longing. And there is a despair that you feel. You already understand this. So, this bride, until she's being assembled, she's being prepared, and that just happened in time. It's already happened outside of time as well, which is great. But in time, it's still happening. And so there's an embracing that. And you think about Paul. Think about what he went through. And, you know, there's a passage, 2 Corinthians 11, I think. He talks about all the litany of things. He's like, this happened to me. You want to talk about suffering? This, or beaten, shipwrecked, blah, 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 all this stuff. But really, what gets me, like at the end of this whole litany of sufferings, 2 Corinthians 11, is what gets me is concern for the churches.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is what keeps me up at night. She's a mess, okay? The Lord will often give me, for me personally, like there's a corporate understanding of this and the individual understanding. Hosea, you know, like Hosea, like the Lord had a message for Israel. It was a tough message, but he's like, okay, I don't want you just to give you this theological message that you're going to deliver as a prophet. I'm going to give you a heart for a woman who's a prostitute. And you're going to love this woman. And she's going to kill you. She's going to break your heart.
Yeah.
And you're going to still love her. Because that's the way he works. And in my life and our lives, it's the same thing. The Lord will give you his heart for his bride corporately. And also, it's also an individual component to this. And it'll break your heart. And it'll be the death of you. It will kill you. And that's okay. Because you're meant to die this kind of death. by embracing this. But it's not hopeless, it's hopeful. But if we're going to love like him, this is why it's not for everyone. You have to be willing to embrace hopeful despair. And I have, to wrap this up, sorry, I'm long here, but I'm finishing up, I promise. To wrap this up, 2 months go by, to tie it back into the story of Rochelle, 2 months go by, you know, there's all this kind of drama going back and forth, you know, and I'm like, okay, Lord, I'm just waiting, you know, I have a lot. And I kid you not, I won't go into all the details of it, but we had, like, right before I left, you understand, you know, like, with all her doubts, all her thinking, you know, and then I'm thinking, like, you know, from the outside, and even the church there, like, you know, you need to be careful, you're a married man, all this happening. No, I've said it, I'm totally, I'm going to get anything there, I'm happily married, I love my wife, there's no issues, like, I promise you. And, you know, like, this is nothing I'm doing outside of that. But ignoring all of that, and I'm sitting, I remember sitting in a little cafe with her right before I left. And finally, the Lord allowed her to see true love for the first time in her life. I can't even describe to you what happened, other than I had a lot of things that I had to wrap up the trip. I was like, before I leave, I have to give you this, and there's a story. And the Samaritan woman, you know, Jesus knew about her life. Look, I'll tell you, you've been with 5 men, there's a 6th man in your life. She's like, how in the world do you know that? Same thing happened. I knew everything about this sister. I knew everything about her. I cannot tell you how. I just knew. And I shared with her. Let me tell you about you. And I shared this with her, obviously, brokenly through the language. And she got it. And she saw love for the first time in her life. She had never, ever, ever in her entire life ever seen pure love. It had to come through a man. Because man is worth it. Was a solid. She couldn't see it from another. And when she saw it, she goes, this is real? You don't want anything from me? You don't want an illicit relationship? There are no strings attached? Nothing! I don't want anything except for you to know this. And when it happened and all the walls fell, then she was able to pour out the love that she got love in that moment. Then she began to express that love and rejoicing, weeping. The most glorious thing I've ever witnessed in my entire life was in that one moment. And it was like, satisfaction. Utter and complete satisfaction. And
I just wanted to die after that point. I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. I could just die. So after this has happened, you know, this isn't over because I love the church. I love the bride like this. And after it was over, like, people have asked me since this is over. They're like, hey, are you okay? Like, you don't seem okay. I've had many people ask me that. You seem all. And my answer is like, no, I'm not okay. I'm not okay. I'm okay with that. I'm grief stricken. And it's good. And the Lord, and that's the point, is to embrace the Lord in that. Because he has a bride he really loves deeply. And if you're going to, and I hate it. I hate it that I feel this way. Because when you embrace the cross, Jesus, I'm telling you, he did not, in his flesh, did not want this. He even said, please, take this cup from me. I don't want to die like this. Please, not my will, let yours be done, but I don't want this. And I'm telling you, I found myself recently embracing the love of God that he has for his bride, both individually and corporately. And I say the same thing. Please take this. I have told the Lord, please take this from me. It's a curse. I don't want to care. I don't want to know. I don't want to stay awake at night. I don't want to think about the future. I don't care. But in the process of that, the Lord really communicates to me, like, no, this is how we share.
Yeah.
We're sharing this together.
Yes.
I can take it from you, but then I want to give you my heart. And then I'm like, okay, thank you. That's beautiful. Lord, I wouldn't trade the fellowship that I have with you in this.
Yeah.
But I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. So, in closing, I want to read some lyrics to a song. I'm going to play a song and then I'm done, okay? I know I went way over. I apologize. I'm going to read the lyrics to a song. There's a song by an artist by the name of Rihanna, and I heard the song and the Lord just showed me this heart. Like, this is the heart we carry. We carry it, he carries it. I think it's a dual thing, you know? The bride carries it, the groom carries it. But here's the lyrics of the song. It says, that's how much I love you. That's how much I need you, but I can't stand you. Most everything you do, you want to make me smile. Can I not like it for a while? But you won't let me. You upset me. But then you kiss me, and all of a sudden I forget that I was upset. I can't remember what you did, but I hate it. You know exactly what to do so that I can't stay mad at you for too long. That's wrong, but I hate it. You know exactly how to touch so that I don't want to fight or fuss and fight anymore. I despise you. I despise that I adore you. And I hate how much I love you. I can't stand how much I need you. And I hate how much I love you, but I just can't let you go. And I hate that I love you so. And you completely know the power that you have, the only one that makes me laugh, and it's not fair how you take advantage of that fact. And I love you beyond the reason why. That's a love that transcends knowledge. This is his heart. But it just ain't right in the flesh. This just ain't right. I don't want to deal with this. And then it goes on and on. But I want to. That's the kind of the lyrics of it. And when I heard the song, it really spoke to me about what I'm going through and how I feel. And I think if we embrace loving like God, we will feel this too. Because it's how he feels in the natural. I hate that I love you. He gets mad. You read the Old Covenant. You know, he gets mad. And then he's like, but I'm sorry, but I love you. My anger won't last forever. I love you. I love you. You know, but he's so like, it's a lover's thing. You know what I mean? Like you see it. So I want to play the song and I'll be finished. Here's the song. I think communicates this heart.
I hate how much I love you, boy. I can't stand. trying to formulate and stuff. That the Lord spoke in my heart and says, I am love. Be holy as I am holy.
Mm-hmm.
Being holy is being free as I am free. I can do that for a reason. I can be holy as God because I can do. And that's really how we're going to get the love of God through us. Because we become passionate and free for those who don't have time to meet those walls. You know, we're trying to imitate. And imitate the love of God until we really become, like it says, clear grief, holy grief. We're going to be able to passionately allow God to flow through us. That's a wonderful experience we had. And I'm believing God for getting on that train. Letting that out for us.
Female aspect of the Lord must be expressed, must be, which is,
I just want to thought it. If the creation was suggested for expression and hope, there's only one hope we know, that's Christ. So, even frustration is in Christ. So, I think he was frustrated. Something like that, or it's gone, right? So, even frustration is
to me and moving sometimes. love the power. I love the ability that they had to have influence and to have a familial relationship and a community. Obviously, they had a couple of things that are a little bit, small questions. They had a lot of things going on. But anyway, the Godfather thing really hit me back in the day. The other day I was on the yard, and for whatever reason, and I can't pick it up, I'm on the yard and the Lord talking to me. It goes together pretty easy. And so, what was this? Something works out and he knows he can come back. So he's in love with this American woman. One day, walking down the street, he sees this drop-dead gorgeous woman. It's a J-line. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When the drop-dead gorgeous woman walks in,
I think a scripture that comes to mind is that the word of God is a double-edged sword and it divides between soul and spirit and the marrow. It's like it cuts going in and cuts coming out. It's like it's just a really, like Christ, who is love, is the word of God, and he's a double-edged sword. He just slices and dices. Like it's a painful way, but like that love is painful on both ends. It's a double-edged sword.
I was struck by it earlier.
Thank you. that. And a lot of times, you don't know what's happening in the moment. You're just processing. Questions are already processed.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that even at the beginning, I was like, don't discount your time here at 16 together for this weekend, because there's so much happening that you don't really know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's happening at a level, and you later you realize, Because I, in the moment of that Switzerland experience, I had no idea what was happening. I was like, yeah, that's crazy. But after that, seeing what happened, I'm like, okay, that's what we're going to see. Yeah, it made sense.
Yeah. Tag on Jody's line. I've read his blog, Blood of My God. And, it was good. I liked it. Met you. There was something within that sense of the back of my mind. It was a little rough. It was love, but it was rough. But my father tried to kill me. He was telling me, I don't want to do something like that. I said, yes. Didn't you go there last year? And started it.
God is, boy, what an answer he's got to say.
where God is?
Boy, so scared. He jumped up and grabbed his brother on the way out. He said, hey, look, they lost God. They're trying to bet on us.
In a way, when somebody asked me about we're seeking God, we're trying to find God, it's not a very usual conference. It's nothing like that. He's trying to set the stage of what to expect. I have no idea what to expect. He's praying, God, it's meant for him to be here. I want him to be here. So if it isn't, shut the doors, because I don't want to confuse my brother, you know, because of institutions and stuff like this. And my concept was, all these people are looking for God. Nobody stole him. I worry that. You know, and I come here with that kind of attitude, everybody trying to find God. And it's not like that at all. It's, I'm seeing God's whole garden, not just one section. I'm getting to know the roses that God has and creating new fragrances into my life that I would have never gotten without being here. So, God knows how to set you up.
Hardcore, I love this guy. I love him. I'm in love with this, the Christ in him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the heck to do with this love. It's freaking me out.
Mm-hmm.
I would cry out to the Lord, like, take this away from me. Is this even holy? Like,
mm-hmm.
What in the world? This is not a romantic love. I don't know what to do with this love for him. And he's like, just love him.
Mm-hmm.
Just love him. And it freaked everybody out around me. I'm a married woman. But, like, I was never alone with him. So I was trying to, like, okay, well, I'll make sure I've got a buddy with me so that this isn't inappropriate when we hang out and, you know, have coffee together or whatever and just be with one another and sharing Christ with one another. And I got totally reprimanded over it. I got called out. The appearance of evil that was going on. It was so rough. So awful. But what's so cool about it is that it has some issues with our friendship. But I just keep pushing through that and I just keep loving him. And it's all that I know. Like, I don't know how to not love him. Like, I am compelled to love him. I'm compelled to see him. I'm compelled to care about him. And it's amazing for me personally. I didn't have a relationship with my younger brother because of the ridiculous life I had as a kid, and it's like the Lord brought this younger man to my life to be with my brother.
Yes.
I'm like, I know how to love family that's non-intentional.
Yes.
Like, I know that.
Yep.
And I don't give a rip if other people know that or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's coming to like sit with that and be okay with that and not care, because I care so much about other people.
Yeah.
And that is so gross. Like, God is healing in so many ways with that. That's just this weird rejection I have that he's healing me of. And like, just coming out of it, well, like, I kept thinking in my mind, this is religion, guys. Like, this is not his love. Because Jesus did stuff that just, it defied everything. I know that culture. I know what the Lord was going into. He was going into this crazy, like, look at the Taliban, okay, look at Afghanistan, look at the way women and men are separated. That's what I was from. And when I came into the knowledge of Christ, these were the things that drew me to him. These are the things that I saw was radical. Because when I go into a Muslim home, we've got a curtain that's dividing us, and the girls are on one side, the guys are on the other side. And let me tell you, there was still sexual immorality going on. I knew about all of that. I'm like, our veils aren't keeping us from being hit on, you know, because I was fully covered. And still getting hit on, still inappropriate things that would come at me. And I'm like, what do I have to do to avoid this, you know? And so coming into the knowledge of Christ and seeing this play out in the evangelical circles, I was so disgusted by it because I'm like, this is Islam. This is the religious system. This is not Christ. I'm not doing anything evil. I don't have evil intentions. I just want to love this guy the way Jesus loves him. And I don't know how to do that.
That's a powerful point. And I think there's such fear. And the conversations need to happen. I think these bring up real issues, especially when you're talking about Bible life. I'm not trying to discount the real issues this can bring up. But the principle, I think, or even the underlying theme behind this is love. Like, there is only one guarantee that will protect you from sexual immorality. And it's not rules. And it never has been rules. Because if it were, then you would look at Islam with plenty of rules, or the evangelical system with plenty of rules, and it would fix it. And it doesn't. Flesh is flesh is flesh. But the life of Christ and the Spirit, which is pure love, like, he is the only safeguard. You know, that's why Paul would always appeal back to it. Okay, no. The deeds of the flesh are these things, and this is what comes from the fruit of the Spirit. So you always go back to that. And you can't, and then once you, as we live by this love of us, you can't love, and I had a friend ask me, he goes, how much is too much? How much is too much love? Have you ever loved someone too much? The answer is no. And you never have to be afraid to love somebody too much.
Yes.
It's okay.
This is
totally
a question like that, you're not looking at walking.
Yeah.
One statement that you made that I think really speaks to this sister's challenge, and just to a lot of the challenging the scripture you brought up earlier, was the religious system cannot define what evil is. You know, and how often do we let those rules define what evil is? Even when we come outside of that system, we still look to those rules to define what evil is, so we can keep that appearance of being low A. But you then said, is life defined what evil is? And I love that. I love that, because what you did in France could have been perceived as evil by many in a religious system, but you recognize evil would have been not doing it because the Lord is lying in you, desire that. And it's powerful to let that light shine in us and say, you know what, I'm not going to worry about what so-and-so says, I'm going to worry about what the Lord is trying to live through me.
You did mention something about the cost of this love. Yeah. And I think I think sometimes the sister, she's battling some of the cost of it. Kind of like loss of joy.
Yeah,
for the cost. Of this kind of love, and let that fall away. Because if we get our minds wrapped around it, we'll start behaving in a different way, and we'll be missing the mark. We don't want to miss God's heaven will, because we're trying to do things God's way, because of the battle we're having, we're going in common law joy. But this is happening because I'm doing this. Praise God, because this wouldn't happen. So I know I'm in the right place.
Security.
reality. You know what I mean? Like, love is, the reality of love, and it's self-evident. You know, like the Samaritan woman, whatever she was thinking, just quickly put to rest when she got a glimpse of that love.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, you know, this is way higher and transcends. This is from a different realm.
Yeah.
And it transcends. And that's what he's talking about when he's saying, I want you to love one another like this.
Yeah.
It's the new commandment in the same way. And when it becomes a reality in your life, it does put confidence. There's a lot of confidence. Like, you know, I do talk about this with my wife, this practical level. Like, hey, if I'm going to have a conversation, I want to settle. I mean, I just want her to be aware of it. So, like, we're not. If it's love, you don't have to hide it. If it's real, there is no shame in it. It can be out in the open. But it, if it's not a substance, a reality, and you try to, like, do this, man, it is. It's like, no. Like, this is like, no. There's a lot of problems in that. You know?
Yep.
So I hear what you're saying.
You can see the imitation.
Yes.
You can see right through that. What was that line? You can see the imitation. You can see right through that imitation. Yeah. 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 Michelle?
I just want to say that I really appreciate that you really broke down that story to feelings and emotions. Because my whole entire life, in the religious organization I was in, I went to Bible college for 4 years, I've always looked at the letter, and I've not really completely, fully understood the spirit of the letter. And the last 2 years, really, actually the first, when we came out of the institution, the Lord told me to not read my Bible for a month. And I freaked out, like, just I stopped for like a whole month. And when he allowed me to get back into the Word, he told me to read it with no filters, only Christ lens. And the Bible is now it's becoming alive to me. And so it's still a process, but I appreciate the fact that you took that story and you made it real. So what is she feeling, and what is he feeling, and that, you know, you look at the Bible sometimes, and you don't think about the feelings. Like, they're just like us. These are people. Like, they're just us. And like David, you know, just going back to reading the story of David, you know, a man after God's own heart, and he had the same struggle. And I think that when you did that today, it really just kind of messed me up in a good way. Again. And I really appreciate that because I haven't for so many years. I've always been separate. It's always been just head knowledge, just separate. Okay, that's that story. How can I apply it to my life? And it's not that. It's look at this. This is my life. Or this is my life. So this is what we're going through. And I just want you to be encouraged with that movie.
Thank you. That movie's been replayed through us.
Yeah.
We can't go on. We have to stop.
We still got 10 minutes.
What?
Got 10 minutes of the 40 minutes.
Well. Jody has a few announcements.
I'll make
them
quick. Because I really need to use the facilities. Okay, so and if you've noticed, we have new people today. So if you were not here for the presentation yesterday on who International Teams is and the building that we're in, there are some of these pamphlets in the back, just if you're curious. Now it's snack time. Remember, you go down half a flight of steps, and there's all kinds of goodies.